Today, hosting Investing Simplified is Carl Jepsen, attorney and partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm. You can call Carl now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, attorney Carl Jepsen.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepsen. I'm filling in for Chuck Price today. Chuck is out of the studio today. And in the studio, however, is Kevin Stege of the Baker Colson CPA firm. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Carl. A two-headed snake today.
Yes, yes. We're that means that we're probably not going to tell you, although Chuck sometimes worries about it, that we're going to give you a 15 or 20% guaranteed rate of return, because we're not going to do that and wouldn't do that anyway. But nonetheless, that's not the fun part for us. We thought, since that there's just the two of us today, that we would have a discussion about estate taxes, and particularly Oregon estate taxes, and why it is that it's so complicated. and we're going to have a nice discussion about, and this may be boring to tears, but it'll give you some of the fundamentals of how the estate tax works, whether or not you have to worry about it, and if there's anything you can do about it. But if there's any other subject, legal or accounting-wise or tax-wise or even investment-wise, we'll give a shot at it. And you can give us a call. You can call in at 503-417-7626, or if you're outside the area, 800-990-0750. We would encourage any calls that you'd like to make, because that's what kind of makes it interesting, because when we know what you're interested in, then we can prepare our shows so that we will have topics that are interesting to you. I've had a lot of questions over the years about estate taxes, and I know that Kevin does all the time. And I think sometimes once people understand what they are, they feel a little less threatened by them and a little more informed about how they work, and they can feel a little better about their estate planning. So anyway, again, telephone numbers if you want to join in, and we certainly welcome that, 503-417-7626. Or 800-990-0750. So I think Kevin's going to start off, and I want to give kudos to Kevin, because this is his idea. What he's going to do is talk about the estate tax return here in Oregon, and it's called an Oregon 706, for those of you who are interested in the numbers. And one of the things that is interesting there is that I've looked at this form, and I can tell you that and the instructions, which are meager, and it is a very challenging thing. But it's kind of like saying, okay, here's the end product of what we're talking about in estate tax, and here's why it's so complicated, and here are some of the pieces that go into it. So, Kevin, tell us a little bit about what the 706 is and what it does and why it's has to be done.
All right. Well, sounds good. Before we get started, I know Chuck would have liked to have been here this week, though, especially with the markets this last week, China and Greece and the effects that they've had on the markets. I'm sure he would have plenty to say about that.
Oh, I'm sure he would. And I would hearken back to some of the, if you've been privileged enough to listen to Harry Dent, you know, he sends you more information than you can probably process. But one of the things he's been saying for a long time is that China's economy is tenuous, and Greece has no economy. But anyway,
that's right.
But you know, he's been a fairly good prophet in that regard. So
that's true. And I think next week Chuck will be back, and he will have Rodney Johnson on from the Dent Research Institute. We've always enjoyed having Rodney as one of our bi-monthly, the Dent Research always sends a person once a month, and it's usually Harry 1 month, and then the next month it's Rodney.
Right.
And Rodney's always great to get a perspective from that maybe doesn't have quite so much fire and brimstone behind it like Harry does.
No, but Rodney's kind of like the Dick Cavett of economists. He's got a real dry sense of humor, which is really fun to listen to. So he's really entertaining as well, and so it's just fascinating. But the information they give underlying just the neat presentations that they give is really quite remarkable. So hopefully we'll welcome you all next week for Rodney Johnson.
Absolutely.
So 706, go for it.
All right. Well, sounds good. You know, you had mentioned the instructions to the Oregon 706. And well, first off, I want to say, you know, we're not going to get real technical here, but I do want to give you an idea of when, you know, maybe you're going to be appointed the executor of an estate, or you're going to be the successor trustee of a living trust that's no longer living. I guess that would be an irrevocable trust at that point, and usually that becomes somebody's estate. If you're faced with having to look at this, it's basically a snapshot of what a person has in terms of assets and liabilities at the time that they died. And if the gross assets are over $1 million, then you have a filing requirement with the state of Oregon. And regarding, so hopefully during this segment here, we'll go over the things that you need to address to, number one, determine, are you subject to this? And then number two, how to go about doing it. And in some cases, it may be easy enough for you to prepare the Oregon 706. I would say this is probably one of the areas and times in life that you will save yourself a lot of aggravation and time to have somebody, and money, more likely than not, somebody who knows what they're doing are going to be able to help you save some money on this, to help you, you know, get some professional preparation advice on the Oregon 706.
Actually, my advice usually is to go to your friendly CPA and have them do it.
Yes,
because it can be. We're allowed as lawyers, we're allowed to fill those things out, and there are some who are, you know, inclined to do so. I think that from the way I've seen it, it is more economical for me to have somebody like you do it, simply because that's not something I do every day, you know, I'm not really set up to do that a lot. You know, you folks have, you know, the kind of the tools that make that a better process. And I mean, I think I could struggle my way through it, but by the end of the day, I think that, you know, there might be enough deduction to get people out of the estate tax. So they don't want that either. You know, whether they pay me or pay the government, probably is not what they want to do. So so I think that it's a more economical choice to have someone who does that all the time. So
exactly right. Well, you know, you had mentioned the instructions, how abbreviated they are for the Oregon 706. They're, in fact, I've got them here. They're all of maybe 9 pages, and that the first page is the table of contents. So fairly small, but that does not belie the complexity that rides underneath this. What's interesting is on the Oregon Department of Revenue website, when you go there for research and stuff, and you go to the contacts page to contact the Oregon Department of Revenue division that oversees this, it says, if you are a professional preparer, please do your own research before calling us. So here's the organization that is supposed to be providing the advice to everybody out there and in charge of the laws and regulations around it, and they want you, at least the professional preparers, to do their own research, and that's probably to head off, you know, simple question. Probably that's what's happened is you have people, professional preparers, that don't know what they're doing. They have they do 1040s or business returns. They have a client who dies, and they're like, well, I need to do this for my, you know, client because I know the tax situation, but they've never prepared a 706 before. And so now they're calling Oregon with all of these basic questions. But honestly, there's not a lot of good places to get the answers out there, unless you literally have experience and have worked with people who've done it before, and so that's kind of a funny little beast.
Well, that's for sure. And just to kind of start off the calculation, as you mentioned, we're really talking about an estate that has more than a gross amount, more than $1 million. Now, a lot of times people will say, "Oh, well, it's under $1 million because I got a bunch of mortgages." Well, that isn't the way that works, unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be. If you have an estate that's, they're not looking at the debt; they're looking at the market value of the assets as of the date of death. And so if you've got several pieces of real property, maybe they're leveraged to the hilt or even underwater, they're still going to look at the market value, and you're still going to have to, if it all goes over $1 million, you're going to have to file as tax return. Then, of course, you get deductions for the mortgage amounts, and it may very well be that there's no tax to be paid, but they still want that return filed. So, So that's just one starting point, which most people would miss.
That's exactly right. Typically, when I have a client and I see an appointment come on the calendar and it happens to be the client's son or daughter, I get a little nervous. And sometimes, yes, when they come in, I find out that, you know, the client is moved on. And typically what I do at that point is I check to see if they're working with an attorney, usually advise them to do that. It just seems to really be much more helpful. But then the very first place I tell them to start is assemble. Well, you know, once you have a cold body on your hands, let it get cold first. Not to make light of this, but let it get cold first. You don't need to rush into anything in the first couple weeks. But assemble the trust document, the will, and the death certificate. Get those three things in order, and now you have a beginning spot to start knowing what you're looking for. And really, with the trust document and the will, you're determining who the beneficiaries are going to be and how the money is supposed to go, and really what the legal title is of a lot of the assets. Typically, a child or two or three knows what's going on with their parents. They've been involved in the last few years or decade or however long it may be. And that's really good. But if you're going in cold turkey, then you definitely need those documents to help get you going. And they're going to be needed for the Oregon 706. All three of those need to be attached to the return. So once you get the trust document, the will, and the death certificate put together, then the very next thing is, and this is the one within probably the first month is the most important thing to do in that first month, as you alluded to, Carl, and that's to start assembling the inventory of assets and getting documentation for the value of those assets. The documentation is needed because that also gets attached to the Oregon 706 as proof of the value. And that's not such an easy job. It's easier said than done. Took about 15 seconds to say it. A lot of times it takes hours and
days and weeks. You bet. Finding value is, a lot of times you can't look at what's on the piece of paper because the asset's older. It's probably changed in value. And we're trying to find out what it was at the date of death, which is kind of the issue. Well, why don't we take a little break and come back, and we're going to fill out this form, and and we'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Get some coffee.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.
When you have questions about your health, you go to a doctor, right? But when it comes to your financial health, like what investments will give you the best return, why are you talking to your spouse's cousin Lou? You need Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Chuck Price knows investing is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's about what's best for your financial health. Sure, investing can be complex, but like your medical doctor, Chuck Price makes the complex simple, so you understand exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Sign up for our free newsletter and see our free videos at AskTheFinancialDoctor.com or call 503-253-3000 and make an appointment for a free financial checkup. We'll give you the facts and our honest advice. Then make your own decision. Nothing against your spouse's cousin Lou, but we've been helping people for over 40 years.
We do Investing Simplified.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Call 503-253-3000.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Coulson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we again encourage your calls, 503-417-7626, whether the questions are related to the estate tax preparation or anything else that you have, definitely give us a call, 800-990-0750 for those out of the area, and we would love to hear from you. So getting back to the estate tax prep, when you're assembling the asset inventory, we'll just briefly go over some of the major classes of assets and how to document the value on those assets. First thing is such things as bank accounts or brokerage accounts or retirement accounts. Usually the monthly statement for the month of death is the most important document for establishing that value. Usually we can back into, if they die at the middle of the month, we can back into what the value was as of that day, or a lot of times the bank statement says what the daily balance is, and that's that gets you real close. Hopefully, there may be outstanding checks or deposits that have to be considered, but that's a good way. With brokerage accounts, and I know we do with this with Chuck Price all the time in his firm, when somebody, typically they're not going to pass away at the 30th or the 31st of the month, and so you have a mid-month valuation, then that's typically not going to be on that monthly statement. The monthly statement is a great place to start and usually is sufficient for things such as bonds that don't change so much between month to month. But when it comes to stocks and securities, like stocks, they do need to have a valuation as of the actual day of passing. And the brokerage firm is the perfect way resource to have them print out what their holdings were and what the value was as of that day.
Well, especially given the volatility of the market that we've seen for some time now, that one day it can be one thing and it can be significantly different just the very next day. So
absolutely, and we will talk about an election you can make to help minimize some of that volatility in this snapshot that we take so that you're maybe not unfairly penalized, maybe in just a spike on the day that somebody passed away. Use your broker if there's a brokerage account, and that's typically going to also apply with retirement type accounts such as IRAs and 401ks that the broker may be the trustee for you. So that's a good place to start. Another thing we see, obviously everybody has personal property. How do you value personal property? If they have a large enough collection of personal property, that's right, weigh it, put it on the scale and weigh it and give it a dollar per pound, I guess. But no, if you have a personal property, some people have an estate sale. And if you sell, 3/4 of the estate personal property, then that's going to help you document the value. For the most part, personal property isn't worth very much. And putting a couple grand down for, clothes and furnishings and that type of a thing is typically sufficient. You just give your best estimate, maybe the same way you value goodwill donations. This would be a similar thing. Life insurance. Typically, you're going to get a form from the life insurance company. If it's big enough, it's a Form 712, and they're going to tell you the value and how they calculated it and what they paid out. If it's a small enough policy, you may not get that official form. And in that case, they're going to usually at least send a letter to say, here's what the value is, and here's the residual amounts, here's the interest from the date of death that we paid, so on and so forth. So that's going to help you establish value on life insurance. And yes, that does have to go on it. That's just the only place where life insurance is taxable, is a estate tax return. Obviously, it's not subject to income taxes. U.S. savings bonds, EE bonds, those type of things. A lot of our baby boomers and older generations invested heavily in those and have a fairly good portfolio. You can go to U.S. Treasury Direct, and they have a great valuation calculator where you actually put in the value of the E-bond, the serial number, and it tells you what the value is plus accrued interest in the accrued income. And that's, print that out, and you've got a great documentation for your Oregon 706.
Yeah, the computer program that the Treasury Department has is pretty useful. They can give you that value very quickly.
Absolutely. It's one of the very helpful things, helpful things.
But you do have to have the bonds in front of you because you got to type in the numbers to have them show up.
Exactly right. And, that brings up a good point is many times such things like a CD, say you have a 6-month CD and the person passes away halfway through. Well, say it was a $10,000 CD. Well, that CD has accrued interest that's going to pay, either pay monthly or maybe pay at the end of the term. And you have to know what that accrued interest is. Or maybe you have a stock that has declared a dividend, but it hasn't paid it yet. Mm. And so this is where it starts getting complicated. And, if it's a small stock and we're talking, a $50 dividend, probably not a big deal. Obviously make an attempt to get that on there. But, if we're talking a large holding, say, some of these legacy investments where somebody has, $50,000 shares of U.S. Bank because it's been in the family forever. Well, you got to look at the accrued dividends and the accrued interest on the date that the person passes. And so those are important to consider. And that's where complexity really starts coming in.
Well, it is amazing when you start thinking about it. I was thinking about how you find out what these things are worth and how much they have to consider. And like you said, how accurate does it have to be? Like with personal property, not quite as much, but with other things, much more so. So would you say that in your practice, most people basically bring you information that tells you what the assets are, and then you kind of have to go find out what the value is?
A lot of times that is the case. Usually I have a handwritten list. Usually I sit down and say, okay, let's get a general idea of what the assets are. And then I write out, we have a duplicate list where I say, okay, this is what I want you to look for this asset. And then a lot of times I'm dealing with the broker to do the dirty work behind the scenes to try to get the accrued income and stuff like that the client won't typically know about. But yes, that's a lot how it works. Moving on from the accrued income, oftentimes you have things where you're not getting a statement, such as cash on hand. Maybe you have cash under the mattress. Maybe you have a fireproof safe with gold bullion in it, and that it happens more than you think, especially with the downtimes that we've had the last 10 years. People have moved into gold a bit, and so you do need to take a physical count of cash, and you do need to, if you have gold coins or that type of a thing, that does need to have a value associated with it. And then I think lastly, the major asset to look at here is going to be things that need an appraisal, a proper appraisal. And this, is an expense that unfortunately needs to be done. Real property typically is going to need an appraisal. The IRS does indicate that a comparative market analysis is acceptable. I would say an appraisal takes precedent over that. But if you could, if you're talking, $5,000-$10,000 difference because it's a $150,000 piece of property, The CMA is probably okay to go, but in many cases, it's going to be worth your money to get an appraisal.
Yeah, the distinction I think there is that you have to hire a licensed appraiser to get the appraisal, and they're going to charge you depending on what kind of, you know, there's varies a lot. If it's a commercial property, it's going to be significantly more expensive, but they will charge you several hundred dollars for an appraisal on a residential real property by an appraiser. But the real estate agent may or may not. They usually will give you one, you know, with the view that maybe they'll get the listing someday. But a CMA is merely a market analysis. It's not an appraisal in the same sense, but it essentially amounts to the real estate broker bringing to bear his experience, her experience in the market, and going out and looking at what they believe to be comparable sales around the area that were recent. And then they'll, you know, essentially using that kind of give you a value. And you know, I like you said, I think in a lot of times those are fairly close to what the appraiser has.
That's exactly right. And try to avoid using the property tax statement for the real market value assessment. In fact, I've seen guidance that says that that's not acceptable.
Yeah, the reason I think, you know, while that may be a starting point, you know, but the thing about using that, and we use it for like putting on a petition for probate because we don't have anything else yet. But a lot of times the way that they calculate those values is on a kind of an indexed or a regional, you know, indexing where basically they look at an area and they say, okay, all of these properties in this area are now going up 5% or whatever it is. So and they don't get around to all of the areas at the same time. So a lot of times you could be behind their calculation or ahead of it, depending on the timing of it. So, but it is at least some starting point. And obviously, if you then end up with some value that is radically different by a CMA or an appraisal, in today's market, generally speaking, you would have a market value somewhat over what the tax value is. But, you know, five or 6 years ago, you would have had just the opposite. You would have had a way below what the market was.
Exactly. So, and I think right before we take our break, the last thing that would need evaluation, not the last thing, at least the last thing on my list here, is business interests. If they have a closely held business, a partnership, that type of a thing, that's going to need a proper business valuation done by somebody who knows what they're doing and can apply the proper discounts if applicable.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a good break point. Let's think about having a break for a couple of minutes. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Again, we want to encourage you all to give us a call even just to make a comment. If you want to talk about some other issue, that's okay too. If you have specific questions or if you've had experiences with the state tax or anything like that, or just probate or anything that comes to mind, give us a call, 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. We would encourage your calls because it makes it easier for us to know what you want to hear. And then you're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy, so is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government, or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price. Hey, Gene, Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified, and I think our pleas for calls has been answered, and I understand that Eileen is on the line and has a question for us. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning.
How can I help you?
It's not really a question. I'm sure you're already aware of this, and hopefully you were going to talk about it, but it's in regards to the initiative petition that's being presently circulated. And it's called Protect Family Giving from Taxes. And at the bottom it says, this section protects family gifts from gift taxes, income taxes, inheritance taxes, estate taxes, and any other form of state or local taxation. And this would be good during life, upon death, or after death.
Well,
so are you aware of this?
Not precisely, but I can tell you that I'm guessing that would, what it would do is basically exempt all type of family gifts, regardless of what, when, or how they're made, from any kind of taxation. Currently, if you make a gift to anybody, it's income tax free to the person who gets it, unless you give them an IRA or something, I guess. But also. It is probably estate tax free, except that it depending on how big it is, it can reduce the amount of estate tax exemption that's available to that person.
Well, this is for the purpose of raising our million in Oregon to the federal level of 5 million.
Well, I would think that would be a great idea myself.
That's also in the petition.
Yeah. Oh, that would, okay. Well, that makes sense. I wouldn't be surprised. Oregon used to, many years ago, and for as long as I can remember practicing law, just followed what the federal government did. And so that way it made it really simple because, you know, if it was good for the federal's return, it was good for Oregon, and you only had to worry about one thing. But when they decided not to go forward with the larger amounts than the million, then that caused some real grief because it created this differential that gave some real problems for us planners and for people who had certain kinds of estate plans. I think most of that's been fixed, and the legislature actually put together some things in the statute that allowed for kind of revision of the formulas in the trust to make it make it happen a little better. But a lot of estates, quite frankly, are doing away with the estate tax altogether.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised that. But I mean, I think in Oregon, if you made it exactly like the federal government giving you $5.43 million per person, that eliminates about you know, 99% of all the people in the state of Oregon. You know, the you know, Phil Knight might still qualify for estate tax, but almost nobody else would. So
right. Well, I understand that Washington and California have gone to the $5 million.
Yeah, yeah. California basically did what that says. They went. They said, let's just follow whatever the feds say. Yeah.
Right.
Washington, not that I know of, Washington is still $2 million, I think, unless the legislature changed it this last legislative session, which I haven't seen any notice of that.
Oh, well, $2 million would help.
Yeah, so the total would be four. So the total would be $4 million for a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in Washington.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah. So. Well, it's an initiative that's being circulated right now, so people that are interested should sign it. Might not affect me, but it's going to affect the farmers with the big farms and businesses and so forth.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the areas where the estate tax can really take a bite, and an unfair bite is where, particularly, like I say, if you had a family farm for generations and generations, and then the patriarch dies and all of a sudden they're faced with a huge estate tax because the value of the farm has gone up, you know, tremendously. Well, and if you're a farmer, you know, oftentimes farmers have to leverage things to get their crops in, and sometimes they have a good year and sometimes they have a bad year and all of that sort of thing. And coming up with a whole bunch of cash usually forces them to sell the farm. And so it's really an unfair kind of thing. And I think there's a similar situation too if you have a small business. And you know, a lot of people think of there are a lot of businesses which are, you know, really small businesses, even though they make quite a lot of money, but nonetheless they're worth a million. and you know, the family's built the business over generations perhaps. And then, you know, again, the patriarch or the matriarch dies, and all of a sudden they've got to come up with this bunch of cash, or they have to, you know, sell the thing. And if you try to sell the thing at a kind of a fire sale basis, you're going to get taxed again because there's going to be a capital gains on it as well as the inheritance tax. So you're kind of I'm looking at Kevin here. Am I right there? He's nodding. Yes, I'm right there. So anyway, that's one of those things
going.
That can be bad. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right, right.
You're right.
Were
on
you
target.
Aware that it was on the ballot? I'm not sure if it was the last one or the one before, and it failed by just a very small margin.
Yeah, I think that's true,
and they put it back on.
Well, as I understand it, the percentage of funds or proceeds derived from estate tax in the state of Oregon, even as it is today, isn't really all that much in contrast to all of the other forms of taxation. So it's not like they're going to be losing this humongous amount of money, I don't think. So.
Well, I don't think it'll ever happen to let the legislature do it. It's going to take this initiative petition.
Well, you may be right there. The legislature, you know, kind of is a little reluctant to do things that actually mean anything. So,
yeah, right. Okay.
You know,
well, I've always felt that
the legislature is great on saying, okay, we got this big problem now. If we just put a notice on it that says this is a big problem, that'll be good for us.
And, yeah.
You know, they can solve all problems by notifying the public not to do this or to do this.
So, yeah. Right. Well, I just wanted people to be aware, and the petition is being. Common Sense for Oregon out of Salem is the one that's initiating it.
Terrific. Well, that's a great call. We really appreciate your calling us, and hope you continue to listen.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Eileen.
Bye.
Well, that was a great call from Eileen, and I couldn't be more in favor of Oregon going to a similar tax program as the feds do. Of course, if you've listened to our show before, you've definitely heard us talk that every year, Oregon taxpayers get a tax hike because the Oregon $1 million exemption is not indexed for inflation.
Right, right.
And so that over the course of, if this doesn't change over 10, 15, 20 years, that's, you know, everybody's going to be subject to that. So this would be a good thing to do.
Well, and one of the other things that comes up in my practice all the time is I'll have people who have, you know, what I think are substantial assets. They're vulnerable to Oregon estate tax, but not to federal estate tax.
Yeah.
And then they say, and we want it really simple. Well, that's hard to do. It's hard to make it simple to take advantage and try to minimize it as much as you can. and still, you know, make it so that it's easily understandable or easy to administer.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The typical opponent to this initiative is going to be the school unions, government. Those have been the government employees. Those are the ones who are typically against this, and so that's which is a pretty strong lobby, and so that's why it's been hard to pass something that really does make sense. But once you bring up the fact that you try to bring up the argument that hey, this is going to ruin our schools, then you get a lot of people voting against something like this. But I think it just makes sense and really simplifies life after death, if you will, for people.
Yeah, for those left behind, it does.
That's right.
It makes it a little easier. That's for darn sure.
That's right.
Well, so going back to your 706, and we've got covered a bunch of stuff. We
briefly talked about the gross estate, and we kind of got you on track for how to value all the assets. If the value of all those assets is what gets you,
I'm glad to hear. We have another caller. It looks like Bob's on the line about trust.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah, are you with us there?
Yeah, hello. I have, my wife and I have a trust, and it's, we have two children, and they're in the trust, and everything we have is in the trust. Now, my wife is suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever, and she's institutionalized now, and what is the consequence of that until death? Is there anything? I mean, she's not capable of signing anything or anything like that. What is the consequence? Is there anything that a person should know or do?
Well, one of the good things about a living trust, which is what you have there, is that most all of those have a provision in the trust that says if one of the trustors, that would be your wife in this case, becomes incapacitated, that, you know, usually it says that the non-incapacitated spouse basically takes over managing and can manage all of those financial affairs out of the trust. Now, if it is someone who is, and sometimes trusts will say, if a person becomes incapacitated, that there's a successor trustee that steps in and acts as a co-trustee. The more common situation is where the competent spouse gets to manage all of the assets and can use those for the benefit of both spouses, that's a good thing. So it shouldn't impair your ability to access, certainly not if all of the assets are in the trust. It shouldn't impair your ability to transact business. Now, some trusts say that you need to get like a letter from a doctor or two doctors or something like that that say, Mom's kind of, has become incapacitated. She's suffering from this kind of illness, and therefore, she no longer can manage her own financial affairs, and that then is used by you in this case to, if you go to the bank and the bank says, well, we want Mom to sign, you say, well, no, wait a minute, here, I'm the sole trustee now, and here's the letter that says so. Did that help answer your question, Bob?
Okay, I think we...
Did we lose you, Bob? I guess we did.
Okay. So
nice question.
But that is a good question, and it's good to chat with an attorney on that and get an idea of what's happening there. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll come on back with our final segment of Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy. So is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government, or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do investing simplified.
How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Paging Dr. Price. Paging Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. Chuck is out of the studio today, but Kevin and I are here to answer your questions. And, you know, we're getting down to the end of the show, so we're going to just talk briefly about, we were talking about estate taxes in Oregon, and I'm just going to talk about some of the fundamental rules or aspects of how you might minimize or avoid them altogether. And again, a lot of that depends on how much money we're talking about. But there are basically a couple of ways to do it. Number one, and I think sometimes a really good one, depending on how you do it, is just to reduce the size of your estate while you're alive, so it's below the $1 million or $2 million threshold if you have a married couple. The other basic ways of minimizing it are what we call the marital deduction. The marital deduction allows a transfer of assets from one spouse to the other, either during lifetime or at death, with no tax effect at all. Just, it's an unlimited amount. It could be $50 million and there's no tax. Now, if the spouse dies with $50 million in her pocket, though, then she or he is going to have, her heirs are going to have a big estate tax problem. But nonetheless, that's a really good thing that helps out. And then the other thing is what we call taking full advantage of the exemption amounts, the $1 million per person. If it's done right, that means that theoretically we can have people be able to pass at least $2 million in Oregon tax-free, estate tax-free to their you know, to their heirs. So that's and there are complicated ways of doing that. So I'm not going to go into a whole lot of things, but you combine the marital deduction with the tax exemption, and we use other things that there are certain kinds of trusts that are allowed that let you use the both exemption amounts. There are ways of creating those trusts. One is called a disclaimer, which we use sometimes, which basically says, I don't want that. And it just then it shuttles it over into one of these shelter trusts. And that way, the person who dies gets to use their $1 million exemption. And then whatever's left gets the $1 million exemption of the survivor. So you can use both. But those have to be done before the first spouse dies, otherwise it doesn't work. So that's the important part. And there are some limitations, and it becomes more complex. And unfortunately, the tax code is the concept is relatively simple, but the execution of documents that make it work is not. And so that's why we have to do that, first of all, while you're competent, and secondly, you know, while you're alive. I guess you have to be alive to be competent, but anyway.
Yep. Well, I was going to say, and the tax rate is if you go over the $1 million, say you sneak over just a little bit, say you have $1,010,000 of taxable estate. Well, the tax rate is going to be about 10% to start with. And so, it's only $1,000 that you're paying to Oregon, but the headache of filing an Oregon 706, you'll pay $2,000 to get away from that. So definitely try not to sneak over. But if you do, the tax hit is only on the amount over $1 million.
Right, and that's one of the techniques that we often recommend. I know that you do, which is if you're approaching that taxable arena and then you want to avoid that the tax problem of having to file the tax return, make some gifts. You can give up to $14,000. I think it might be even a little more now. I don't know, $14,000 per person per donor. And so you could, if you have three kids and they each have spouses, you could give $14,000 to each kid and then another $14,000 to their spouse. And that would get a lot of money out of there, and you can, you know, do that every year without any tax consequence whatsoever.
Well, and if it's a matter of say that you know the person is not going to make it through the year, and you want to give more than $14,000, that's okay, so long as you're not giving over the $5.43 million. It will require a gift tax return, but that's simply name, address, Social Security number, and the dollar amount of the gift, yeah. And that's much more simple than having to file an Oregon 706. So
right.
you could give $100,000 or $50,000, just do a gift tax return with the person's 1040, and you've simplified things significantly.
Yeah, I know people tend to be very reluctant to do that, but it's a great thing to save, especially if you're going to have a significant tax in Oregon. You know, say you have a $4 million estate. Well, gosh, you can give away up to
three million,
and you're
3.5,
and you're not gonna hurt anything. The only drawback to that is that the lifetime gift carries with it your basis, the donor's basis of the value. So if you give, say, you give $3 million worth of real estate, but your basis in that is $1 million, that means there's gonna if the beneficiary
sells it.
It's going to be a capital gain on $2 million. So anyway, well, we're running out of time here. It's Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful weekend.
We do Investing Simplified. Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management.